At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Are you the Tragically Hip's ultimate super fan? Or do you know someone who just might be? Well, I'm on the hunt for the biggest hip fan out there. The one who's been there for every tour, knows every lyric, and maybe even has a lyric tattooed somewhere they're not legally allowed to show on Instagram. This is your chance to give them the recognition they deserve. Or hey, maybe it's time to finally recognize yourself. Nominate someone, or yourself, by commenting on our official contest posts on social media. We're looking for passion, stories, and fans who go above and beyond because The Hip was never just a band. It was, and still is, a way of fucking life. The fans with the most nominees will move on to the next round. Yes, there is a second round. But first, we need your help by surfacing the super fans. So scroll, tag, and celebrate the people who've made Hip fandom their personality trait in the best possible way. Dude, there's a sash, there are prizes, there are bragging rights forever. But most of all, there's a chance to be part of something bigger than yourself. So please, nominate someone today.
A member of the DATC media family.
Previously on the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown.
Today we're looking down from high up above. John Paul from Toronto, what do you remember about hearing Gift Shop for the first time?
I remember the video, the black and white video.
Great video.
Powerful. Much music, Countdown days. It was Johnny Faye with the black hat. It's the, simple drum kit. It's the, everyone looks good. Gordo's the Mountie outfit on.
Yeah.
Do you remember, when do you remember hearing it for the first time, JD?
Oh, gosh. I didn't prepare for this. I didn't know you were going to ask me this.
Well, I'm turning the tables later on, so don't worry.
So the chemistry says... Hey, it's JD here, and welcome back to the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown. It is my absolute pleasure to be with you here each and every Monday as we spend some time sharing stories and experiences while counting down 40 essential tracks by the Tragically Hip that you chose with your very own top 20 ballots. I simply tabulated the results using an abacus and a 13-foot length of garden hose that children from the 80s drink from whilst playing out of doors until the streetlights beckon them homeward. How have your favorite songs fared in the rankings? Let me know, tthtop40@gmail.com. This week, I am fucking stoked to be joined by Thomas from Belgium. Thomas from Belgium, how the hell are you doing on this hip-tastic?
I am doing quite well. Thanks, JD. It's a pleasure to be here. Podcast I didn't know about until about a month ago as of recording. But
cool.
It's been lovely.
That's great. Well, first of all, thank you so much for listening. That means a lot. And now it's cool that you're on the show. So that's really cool. And you're the first person I spoke to from Belgium. I don't know if you want to explain that a little bit.
Yeah. So my life story kind of melds in together with how I got into the hip, but I've lived in a couple different countries. I was born in Belgium. I grew up in Belgium, but I've lived in the UK on and off since I was 7. Came back here for university and then again for my job. So that explains why I sound like this and I don't have a thick French accent instead. But the way I got into the Tragically Hip is also just a prolongation of not so much where I've lived, but my tastes kind of progressing and skewing more Canadian as my life went on.
Really?
Yeah.
Expand on that.
So it started out when I was, I guess, just a child. I would have been about 10 years old when I started playing the drums. And one of my drum teachers was you know, obviously a big fan of all kinds of music, but one of the bands that he got me to learn once was Rush. So I started out with Rush from that, and then from, you know, Tom Sawyer being on a couple of episodes of TV shows and things like that. So it started like that, and then when I was a teenager, watching, you know, French TV in Belgium, around the time I was getting ready to go to university, they were showing Murdoch Mysteries on TV. Got into that one, started binging that. Through there, ended up binging Republic of Doyle as well, because that had a crossover episode. And then I've always been a big fan of alternative rock, particularly from the 90s, just my general taste. So I got really into Bare Naked Ladies from that point on. And with all of that kind of going on, I was also a big fan of motorsport, which isn't super relevant, but it's, you know, a lifelong passion that I've been lucky enough to turn into my job.
Sure.
I had a group of online friends through motorsport, a couple of whom were Canadian, and they were seeing this progression over the years. And by the time we got around to, you know, about 2018, so I had been vaguely aware of the Tragically Hip. Like, I think I saw potentially the news story when Gord died. I think that was the first time I'd heard of them. And this is a few months later, you know, there's no way I would have heard of them otherwise, being, you know, in Belgium, in the UK, not really countries where you would hear them at all. So a few months after Gord died, these couple of Canadian friends, shout out to Kevin and Josh from Canada, just kind of got together and said, "We see you like your 90s alternative rock and your Canadiana. Have you tried listening to these guys?" And the song they sent me was Bob Cajun.
Oh, love
it. And I think it took me a couple of listens to really get it. And that song sat with me for a bit. I think that was the only song I'd listened to for a couple of months. And then I went back to it a few months later when a YouTuber I kind of like, Crash Thompson, aka The Rock Critic, put out a video saying how to get into the Tragically Hip. So a tiered recommendation of albums.
Wow.
And I thought, well, clearly that's an excuse. Watched the video. I didn't really do much with it initially. But after that, I started listening to a few extra songs. So along with that, I had the discography open on Wikipedia, because I'm a neurodivergent nerd who works like that. I put together a spreadsheet of all of the songs from the countdown at this point.
You have?
I have, yeah. Color-coded by album as well. But going through that, I thought, well, I'll try listening to the big hits first, and I listened to Ahead by a Century, which was the first song that really got to me. I listened to New Orleans is Sinking, then I got onto Grace 2, and it was just loose songs here and there for a couple of months.
Right.
And then I decided to really take that initial recommendation video to heart. And the first album I really got into was Fully Completely.
Good choice. Good starting point.
Yeah, well, I was kind of limited on that front, because at that point in time, so this is late 2018 at this point, at least in Western Europe, so Belgium and the UK, that was really the only album that was on Spotify.
Oh.
I think we had that one. We had a couple of songs here and there on compilation. So Ahead by a Century and I think My Music at Work were both also available. But otherwise, okay, it was Fully Completely, and I think Man Machine Poem was also on there, and that was it. So it was just Fully Completely for a while. And then around that time, I got my first job. I moved back to the UK to work in motorsport. And that was an opportunity for me to just listen to music through playlists on. And to get into them, I didn't have the opportunity to do it via Spotify. So I got into that via YouTube, you know, YouTube playlists and you know, general autoplay, letting it pick whichever song would be next. And that's how I got into it, you know, album by album, basically. I think the next one to really come through for me was Road Apples. And then it was, I think, Inviolate Light I got into before I did Phantom Power.
Such a great
Yeah, record. They're all just really, really good albums. And then progressively, one by one, they did eventually drop on British Spotify. And I never really looked back since. It took me a really long time to actually listen to all of them. It was only in the last week or two to prepare for this recording that I finally listened to. It was my Music at Work, We Are the Same, Now for Plan A, and Man Machine Poem. I hadn't listened to until a couple weeks ago because they were the last ones to drop on Spotify. So by that point, the hip weren't so much an active interest that I was trying to get more and more into. They were just a fact of life that were always on my all-purpose playlists. And, you know, whenever I had all of my liked songs on there, pretty much one song in every 8 to 10 was a hip song. All of Up to Here, all of Road Apples, Fully Completely, Day for Night, Phantom Power, Inviolate Light, and I'd say about 2/3 of Trouble at the Hen House, if not 3/4, they're all on there. So I'm really quite deep into them now. But yeah, it took for this podcast to enter my life for me to listen to the rest of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That makes my heart warm. Speaking of physiological things, I feel as though we should be testing your urine for maple syrup at this point.
Well, I have actually been to Canada one time in my life.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so for my parents' 20th wedding anniversary, we did a road trip across North America, starting in New York. We went through Boston, then to Montreal and Toronto. So spent a couple of days in each of those cities, and then down to Chicago, Memphis, and Houston, where my dad was working for a couple of days.
Lovely.
So that was the first time I'd properly been to Canada, and that's not necessarily where I fell in love with the place. I already had an appreciation for it, which certainly didn't get lower. It was after that I really properly got into the spirit of things, if you want to call it that. But
sure,
that's my Canadian experience, and I would absolutely love to go back someday. I know it's only a matter of time and also money, but I absolutely love the country, and that probably is one of the reasons that I got so into the Tragically Hip, because even though, you know, a lot of the time it's really hard to have any idea what the fuck Gord is talking about, you can still tell that the vibe and the general atmosphere of all the songs, all the lyrics, if not entirely about Canada, at least are linked to it in some way. And you can just tell that they have and had an absolutely deep, passionate love for Canada. And, you know, I'm not Canadian myself, but it's the kind of wholesome, deep love for your country that I can't help but respect and admire.
Oh, yeah, I think so. What would be the closest comparable in the UK, Thomas?
In the UK, that's a very tough one to answer. I don't really have an equivalent, a band that celebrates
this is the thing.
Britishness this is that the thing, much. Right? At least not in a way that isn't played for laughs.
Right, sure.
You know, I think in Belgium, you certainly have that. You know, I'm from the part of Belgium that speaks French. So the closest equivalent I can think of, at least in terms of their approach to the national identity, would be Jacques Brel, which obviously completely different kind of music. But, you know, in terms of their obvious reverence for the aura of the country, and potentially even in terms of the general public's reverence for them as artists, We're on that kind of level, possibly. The only difference really being that Jacques Brel got recognition outside of his home country, and the
That's where I was leaning, right? It's like, what other bands do you know of that are so enormous in their home country? Like, so enormous. Yeah. They could have done a stadium tour if there were enough stadiums in this country. And yet, you know, like, they did have success outside of Canada, but not the type of success, not even close to the type of success that they had inside Canada. And I honestly can't think of another. Now, I'm not versed in, like, international music the way I should be, but like, as far as like a four-piece or five-piece band goes, I can't think of it.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to think of them, for instance, in the UK. Like, I can think of artists who were huge, but not in a way that captured something quintessential about the country. You know, if we look at the UK, like, for instance, you look at a guy like Cliff Richard, who had stupid amount of number one hits in the UK, and, you know, maybe a couple of songs someone might recognize in America. But
he's
not playing up to the British national psyche like the Tragically Hip were doing.
I just want to jump in just briefly, because I don't think that it was. I think it was like osmosis. I don't think it was purposeful.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they went out of their way to be nationalistic. I saw them on a few occasions where they even said, I saw them on Canada Day one year. And they, Gord introduced the show by saying, it's not Canada Day today, it's Friday.
Yeah.
You know, like, so they get that piece too, you know, like, it's not, and I think that's why it works.
Sure.
It's subtle, and it.
You know, they certainly have their fair share of songs, which is, you know, character studies and storytelling that have nothing to do with Canada.
Right.
But they certainly have a lot more songs about Canada. That, you know, would never have a dream of getting big in America, because, you know, they have songs about America to take up that.
That's right.
To take that up.
Cheeseburgers falling from the sky.
But, yeah, I think that's a John Cougar Mellencamp song. it's really an interesting way to think about it, right? That even their songs that weren't outwardly Canadian, very rarely had a chance. And actually, their biggest hit in America was a song that was at least tangentially Canadian, in Courage, for Hugh McLennan.
Really? I did not know that was their biggest song in the
US. I think so, at least charting-wise. It's the one that charted highest, I'm fairly sure.
It's a great song.
It is a great song.
It doesn't surprise me. Yeah. So what's your go-to these days? Do you have one that you said you started with Foley, and then you got into Road Apples, and then in Violet Light? Now that you've had some time to percolate, like, do you have a record that you go to, or does it depend?
It changes day to day. If I'm recommending one to friends, it's usually Fully Completely as a first go in. If they're very into music and I know they can take something a bit more obscure, a little bit, you know, rougher around the edges, I tend to recommend Day for Night. I think it's a lot more moody, atmospheric, and just generally as a full finished product with a cohesive theme. I honestly think that might be their greatest one. But if I'm just feeling like something that's the most them, usually I'd go with Phantom Power.
It really
depends on who's asking, when they're asking, how I'm feeling that day. But pretty much any album between Road Apples and In Violet Light will have a shot at being my go-to on any given day.
I'm curious, because you mentioned the last four records, and then you mentioned everything up until In Violet Light. But you're missing one there, In Between Evolution. How do you feel about that record?
That one actually is.
I've recently just started to love it. That's why I'm.
Yeah, so that one is on my playlist. I don't love it as much as most of their 90s work. I definitely like it more than the ones they did afterwards, although I do like all of them, to be clear. In Between Evolution, I've had spinning as loose tracks on my playlist for a few years now. And some of those songs are absolutely amazing. Some of them I will tend to just kind of skip because I'm not feeling in the right mood. It feels to me like some of them are fairly similar in terms of vibe. Not to say any of them are bad, but I tend not to be in the right frame of mind for them. That said, I will always have time for, you know, for instance, Are We Family or Gus, the polar bear from Central Park, which at the time of recording has not yet been mentioned. So I guess we can save that one.
It wasn't in the road.
It was not in the road to the top 40. And having done my spreadsheet and figured out that there are, I think from the first albums all the way up to In Between Evolution, there are, if I can pull some of the curtain back, at the time of recording, you've just put out number 32, Emperor Penguin. 31 songs remaining. There are 33 songs that haven't been mentioned from the first few albums. So, you know, unless there's been a massive surprise and, you know, Coconut Cream is up there, I think I know. So Gus is probably my standout. Are We Family is also really, really good. I'm quite partial to Mean Streak as well. I put together my top 20, actually, as an exercise. I obviously didn't have the time to submit it initially, but... none of my top 20 is from that album, but I also had an unordered top 40 and then a top 65, which is just all of the songs that do something for me. And I think, Mean Streak is the other one that was on there from that album. And we also haven't mentioned World Container.
No, that's true.
Which I also, I feel kind of the same way. There are more songs on that one that I do really like. So I had You're Not the Ocean and In View, obviously, on my top 65 that, you know, that makes sense. They were both quite high up. But the one actually from that album that did make my top 20 was World Container, the title track. That was my number 20. And it was absolutely crushing to me that was nowhere near the top 40.
It's been really weird, hasn't it?
Well, I had songs in my top 10. One song in my top 10 that didn't even crack the top 100, that being Titanic Terrarium. That's in my top 10.
Oh, you have that so high?
I had that at number 10. And that's just because it is attached to a core memory for me, that being taking nighttime walks in the park near my house during lockdown. I would just go walking at like 11 at night in the park and, you know, have my playlist go on and on. But Titanic Terrarium came up and it fit my mood so perfectly. I replayed it like 5 times that night and just could not help but fall in love with that song so entirely. And for that reason alone, that's in my top 10. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the experience has a lot to do with it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, you know, what you were doing when you got into the song. Did you, I got a couple more questions for you before we get into the song of the week. I'm curious whether you've watched any of the documentaries or anything like that, the one on Prime or Long Time Running or anything like that.
Yeah, so I haven't caught the new docuseries yet. That is on my to watch list. I'm very terrible at actually going back to that to watch list, but... it's certainly on there, yeah.
Time is, you know.
Time is a flat circle. But I have seen Long Time Running. I watched the National Celebration, the last concert.
Right, yeah.
That one was put on YouTube, so I watched it, really as I was getting really into them. And I think there was another documentary, maybe like a half hour thing from the 90s. That's
right. Full-fledged Vanity.
Could be it. I can't remember the title of it. But that I thought really captured the band as not these big, you know, national heroes or semi-mythical figures, just as, you know, 5 guys in a band that make great songs. And that's always more my favorite kind of documentary, just trying to capture an artist doing their job and how they work. Although, you know, not to Disparage, Long Time Running, that's also an absolutely great documentary and
much
more of a human story. But I think both of them definitely have their place. And honestly, that 90s one really should be talked about a lot more. I think it's great.
Yeah, if it's the one I'm thinking of, it's called Full-Fledged Vanity, and it was a production of CBC back in the day. It's before Fully came out. So
that
Fully,
would make sense.
Like they were Up to Here was big, and Road Apples was highly anticipated, and it was big as well. But Fully is where they absolutely exploded. They exploded. And it's not surprising to me that was your gateway.
Yeah. And, you know, that's not something I had any kind of reference for. For me, I only see that happen when I look at Wikipedia discographies and I see the chart positions go up and up album by album. I think Locked in the Trunk of a Car, that was their first top 10 hit in Canada.
I think you're right. Yeah.
That one's on my, that's my number six, actually, Locked in the Trunk of a Car.
Oh, that would be in my top 10 for sure.
I've done that one live at open mics to a very confused British audience.
Like you're in a band?
No, just myself and guitar. I'd like to be in a band, but that's not happened yet.
Oh, you should definitely. I don't know if you know about our feature that we do every summer called the Pod List.
I'm aware. This is how I got in touch with you the first time. I've submitted a cover.
You submitted a song and I lost it. And then I stood on the cliffs and yelled into the abyss of the internet, where is this person? And meanwhile,
I saw your message 3 days later, so I'll send that to you again.
Please do, because it's very
good. Where were we? I can't even remember. But yeah, so I don't really have that much of an idea of just how big they were, because obviously I came into it, you know, in the wrong country and the wrong era. I don't really have a reference aside from, you know, chart positions and those documentaries. So, yeah.
I can tell you, and I think this is, anybody who's listening who experienced it in the 90s, tell me I'm a fucking moron or tell me I'm right. But I think that around 1995 or 94, I don't think there was an artist that could come into Canada and do more ticket sales than the Tragically Hip. I think the Tragically Hip would have outsold even the biggest acts internationally at that point. Other than the fact that the international acts oftentimes got to play the Rogers Centre, which is our stadium in Toronto, versus like the outdoor stadium or something like that, right? But I mean, they played in front of 60,000 people when I was there, and that was monster. That was just a monster. 60,000.
That sounds absolutely incredible.
It was,
dude. unless they put together what I've seen mooted before of, you know, a reunion show with a guest vocalist every song, which, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. Unless they put that together, I'll never have the opportunity. So I'll always have YouTube shows. That's one of the things that got me into some of the other albums, like some of the songs from Music at Work. Actually, was the first gig by them I saw in its entirety on YouTube was the one from the Fillmore in the year 2000.
Oh, that's
it's
a great
show. I think the one with I can't remember her name, Kate Penner, I think.
Kate Fenner and Matt
Brown. That's the ones. Absolutely wonderful gig. And I go back to it every so often just to get blown away by it every time.
Oh, that's so cool, Thomas. Damn. Well, what do you say? Should we get into the song of the week at this point?
Let's go for it.
All right. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, it's JD here, and before we get back to Thomas and the song of the week, I want to take a brief moment to thank our partners, North Star Bets. Listen, I recently had a real terrible customer service experience. I'm not going to say with who, but it was one of the big five banks in this country. And to say they treated me terribly is an understatement. So there's that. Here's the thing. North Star Bets takes pride in their world-class customer experience. And I can tell you, as somebody who values customer experience, that means a lot to me. If it means a lot to you, then why not make your next bet with North Star Bets? Must be 19 and older to play. Must be based in Ontario. North Star Bets is licensed by iGaming Ontario. Please gamble responsibly.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey, this is Paul Langlois from the Tragically Hip saying hello. Now on with the countdown.
11. 11.
All right.
The blue on the sea. Loose and complete under sky, so smoky blue-green. I can't foresee a Dixie did she, so we danced the sidewalk clean. My memory is muddy, what's this river that I'm in? New Orleans is sinking, man, and I don't want to swim. What's going on? Can't tie yourself up for a deal. He said, I know this sound. Shut your big mouth. You gotta do what you feel is real. Ain't got no picture postcards. Ain't got no souvenirs. My baby, she don't know me when I'm thinking about those years.
Swim.
On the countdown today is perhaps one of the songs you fell in love with back in the day. We heard it a lot. We heard it live a lot. Thomas from Belgium, what was your first experience with New Orleans' Sink It?
Well, those of you who remember every single thing I said in that first half of the episode will remember it was the second or third hip song I ever heard. After Bob Cajun and maybe Ahead by a Century. I definitely remember where I was. I was in my parents' kitchen.
Really?
Yeah, I was in my parents' kitchen. I'd just come downstairs for breakfast. I decided I'll listen to another song by these guys. And I can't remember what got me to pick that one first. Maybe it was, you know, their first hit or something like that, their first big hit at least. And I listened to that one and you know, at the time, I remember thinking, oh, this is pretty good. You know, I hadn't taken the deep plunge into the hip that I would a few months down the line. But it certainly didn't turn me off them in any way. It was a very different vibe to Ahead by a Century and Bob Cajun. You know, it's a lot more hard rock, blues rock, very driving beat. But it got its hooks in me in a different way, and that's with just the guitar work on it.
Mm-hmm. That slide all over.
Yeah, and you know, as I mentioned earlier, I started out playing the drums as a kid. I moved to guitar about a decade ago, and you know, having got into it, I heard the opening riff to New Orleans is Sinking, and I thought, well, already that's something I can play, and that's something I can play fairly easily. And then Rob Baker comes in with his, you know, noodly riff in the left channel, and that's me thinking, well, I'm going to spend a few days trying to learn that part now, aren't I?
Fingers got to move fast. Yeah, for that
they do, and you know. At this point, six and a half years later, I've got most of it down.
Good.
I'm not going to pick up the guitar for you and play it now, because that's guaranteeing that it's going to go wrong. But it's one of those songs that I think for a while it was one of my favorites. Now that my taste has had a chance to settle down, it's in my top 40. It's not in my top 20.
That sounds about right.
So again, to peel back the curtain, I have no idea what position New Orleans is Sinking is on this countdown. You do not tell us before we appear. It might be number three as much as I know, and it would probably be deserved just for how iconic it is and how instrumental it was to their rise. For me, I love it because of, like I said, the guitar work, the fact that it's very accessible. If it was a lot more, let's say, obtuse, not that there are many obtuse Tragically Hip songs, but, you know, harder to understand, let's say, it would have been a lot harder for me to get into them as fast as I did. And just the fact that it rocks really hard. That's always a way to get me. Like, if a song is slow or really well put together, that's probably going to grab me as well. But, you know, I'm a basic bitch. If a song goes really hard, I'm just going to fall for it every single time. and I soon found out that it's by no means their hardest rocking song, but it was enough to really get me into it. And actually, the version of the song that got me hooked on it was not that one. It's the one from a video I saw on YouTube from a live show by them from, I want to say, 1995, where they do the extended jam in the middle, and then they do a very early version of Ahead by a Century in it.
Out of here.
And
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, and they also have other bits in there that became other songs. I think they have the riff to Sharks in there at that point during the jam. An early version of that, and then I think if you look for it, you can You know, you can find it on YouTube if you search New Orleans is Sinking, West Wind. It's that version.
Okay, that's the famous West
Wind. Yeah, that's the one.
I have heard that. I have heard that then, but not for a long
that
time.
That is the version I heard. Oh, no, and by at the end as well, he starts shouting what would become the chorus to Springtime in Vienna. It's just full of genesis of future songs. That's the one that really got me into New Orleans is Sinking, and I never went back from that point on. And for a while, I couldn't have it on Spotify. I had to get a cover of it on my playlist, which was in many ways inferior to the original. But by the time Up to Here actually did drop on Spotify, that replaced it immediately because I just could not go without that sweet, sweet Rob Baker guitar noodling.
he is really underrated, isn't he?
He is. Now, weirdly, a friend of mine put together this album exchange thing. She's put together a few, and I've submitted two hip albums to them, Fully Completely and Phantom Power. And Fully Completely was the first one. And I was borderline offended when she got to it was Looking for a Place to Happen. And she said, it just sounds like the guitar solos of various failed attempts at starting a guitar solo. And I just did not agree with that at all.
I do not.
And
agree that,
I mean, no. She had great things to say about the rest of the album. But I, even listening back at it, I cannot hear it. But he does have, you know, a way of putting together his solos where, you know, at least on the early albums, it doesn't so much feel like he's planning all of them out, crafting them note by note and polishing them, just, you know, doing kick-ass blues licks the entire time. And it really works. It's, you know, straightforward blues rock albums. That's all that it needs. Yeah. And it goes really well with the songs. You know, it's those first two albums, Up to Here and Road Apples, you know, we're not expecting Joe Satriani level guitar. That would actually that would probably ruin those albums if he were to do that.
I think it would totally.
So no, I really do like
I just
style.
Don't think they're flashy.
They're not flashy.
You know, they're not flashy, but it's
and they
like
don't
if
have
you
to
listen
be.
To Music at Work and you listen to Tiger the Lion, that outro.
So good.
That outro solo is so fucking good. It's unreal. It reminds me of David Gilmour.
Yes. I mean, that is, you know, 11 years later after Up to Here, but, it just shows that he is a really fucking good guitar player and he is capable of writing those solos if he wants to. And sometimes that's just not what the song needs. It's just not what he wants to do. And in my opinion, we found that out on Road Apples with, Little Bones. Those two solos, I think, just absolutely blew me away the first time I heard them.
Good. Do you have a beat on what this song is about?
I have a couple. It's, you know, like I alluded to earlier, sometimes it's quite hard to understand what the fuck Gord was talking about, but there's a couple of ins here. I mean, for me, there's definitely something in there about Canadian people moving to America for work. There's, you know, for blue collar jobs. I think you have some of that in there from, you know, hey, North, you're South. To me, clearly, the narrator is Canadian working in America. And it's about his experiences in blue collar America, specifically New Orleans, of course, and just various vignettes, you know, little impressions of his life. Like if you go to the bridge, you know, there's a light bulb hanging on a wire. That's not connected to anything else in the song, but you can picture that in your mind as, you know, you build this idea eventually of this Canadian guy in New Orleans, you know, he's dancing in the street. I don't know, maybe it's Mardi Gras or something, just really taking in the, you know, picking out the highlights of the scenery as he says later on.
I never even put that together. No.
That's my take on it. I don't know what they had to say about it. I didn't look that up. I didn't want that to cover my own interpretation. But
I really appreciate that. I think that's a cool way to do it. Because, I mean, there's lots of resources out there. I don't know if you've been to the Hip Museum.
I have not.
Which is a great thing. But it's other people's ideas. You just shared your own ideas. And I think that that's valuable. I think that's really important. And as far as being right or wrong, I don't think the band would ever hammer that down. You know, like, I don't think Gord was about, this is what this song is about. He was very much democratic and,
of course,
you know, releasing it to the public and let them do with it what they will.
Exactly. I mean, obviously they have some other songs that are way more about something specific than this one is. And yes, some that are way less specific, sure, than this one is. You know, I think it's 1989, you know, we're really early in Gord's songwriting adventures. But the way he puts together these little impressions throughout the song that maybe don't necessarily all make sense together if you take them at face value, but if you take them as different, really, you know, snapshots of one larger story, and leaves you to put it together yourself, I think it's a cool exercise in songwriting, if anything. And you know, for me, I had a fun time piecing it together. Some of it I still don't quite know what to make of. You know, what does Colonel Tom Parker have to do with this? But I guess, you know, just trying to evoke the Southern U.S. in more in general rather than New Orleans, you know, going up to Memphis potentially. But to me, that song has a distinct Southern vibe. And with Hey North, You're South, that's the lyric I keep coming back to, that to me pins it as a Canadian guy's experiences of that. And, you know, the fact that in some cases, he does not appear to be having a good time throughout all of the song, to me, implies that there's, you know, some blue collar labor happening in there. But, you know, it's not a full story. He very rarely tells us the full story. That's why I love the most about it. You know, the top song on my, you know, would be top 20 is also a song that is ostensibly about something but leaves you to piece it together, that being Scared. That's also not yet dropped down on the top 40, so I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah. Looking forward to you discussing that one. And you know, the voice he's using in both of these songs is quite different, but the approach he's using of painting different pictures in each verse I think is quite similar. And I think it's very, you know, if Gord Downie had a signature aside from, you know, a big stamp with a maple leaf on it, it would be putting together these impressions of a scene, of a story, and letting you find the thread between all of them yourself. And I think that makes repeated listens more and more rewarding.
I was just about to say the same thing. It makes it so rewarding, doesn't it? When you hear something that you missed on the first 50 listens.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely just love going back to those old songs. Some of them I must have listened to dozens of times by now. And, you know, I don't always pick up on something new, but, you know, maybe not in the lyrics, sure, but sometimes I'll hear, you know, a couple of guitar notes buried deep in the mix, or I'll pick up on, you know, some drum flourishes that Johnny's doing in the background, or maybe the bass line. And every time I find something that really hooks me further onto each and every song. And, you know, we've been speaking a lot about Gord, but, you know, all of the songs are credited to the band, as far as we're aware. The, you know, it's the rest of the guys who put together the music, and, you know, we can't underestimate their influence on all of those great songs. And you know, for me, that guitar riff is what got me in there first, and you know, all credit to you know, to Rob for that noodling, and you know, as far as we know, to Paul as well for the for just those opening notes, you know, and obviously to go through everything else, to Gord S and to Johnny for the rhythm section that just keeps the song rolling along with the same energy the whole time. It's just, for me, it's a really good blues rock song, and you know, the bassline really good blues rock song for me is better than the bassline really good song in most other genres. So I'll always have a healthy love for New Orleans of Sinking.
It's a great one. Nice way to wrap it up. Thomas from Belgium, do you have any plugs that you would like to make? You mentioned motorsports being your career. Is there anything you can plug in that regard, or your band, or your singer-songwriter?
Well, yeah, there's a few things. I mean, if you like racing cars, I work for a team in Formula E. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say which team, but if you look me up online, you'll find out very quickly. So that's basically electric single seaters. Think, you know, Formula One, but much more niche and with electric cars. You know, it's a series that's been going for going on 11 years, and it's picking up steam year on year. You know, it's cool. Great fun to watch. It's very close racing. You have to get past the absence of any engine noise, but it's
that would be weird.
It is very weird the first time. Yeah. But in terms of my other online presence, I mean, I don't use Twitter very much anymore, but I do have a YouTube channel where I put up some music and other assorted things. So I'm Tommy KL on that. So that's TOMMYKL. And I also have a SoundCloud, which is just my name, Thomas DeBock. Again, that doesn't have much on it, but I've got I've got three Tragically Hip songs on there, including the one I submitted to the pod list. So if any listeners want any advanced listens of that one, you can find it on that SoundCloud.
Excellent. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate your time. And I'm so thrilled that I'm talking to somebody across the pond. That's so cool to hear a Tragically Hip band with an accent. A non-Canadian accent, I should say. Because that's what I got for you. I want to thank you very much. Thanks for stopping by, and pick up your shit.
Thanks for listening to the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown. To email us, send an email to tthtop40@gmail.com. We're social. Find us on all the socials at tthtop40.
Tuvra podcasts and such.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.